Hello and welcome to Nerd Kitchen. This is Max and Ajit. We have Amrita with us. In our previous episode, we left off talking about Ayurveda and the doshas. We pick up right there as we get into more about Ayurveda and figure out about the subtypes in the doshas and see how we can incorporate them into our daily cooking and cuisine.
J'ai plumé la tête de mon alouette. J'ai plumé la tête de mon alouette. J'ai plumé la tête de la queue.
So we've established the three different kinds of doshas. There's a Vata, Pitta, Kapha dosha, and based on what kind of energies you are around you, you are or your personalities, you're one of the kinds. What's interesting is that then these doshas have subtypes. At least that's how I'm going to call it for now. I'm not quite sure what the technical term is, but they have subtypes. And when you go into the subtypes, it's more about those are more going to they're again, I'm not sure if subtypes is the right word to call it, but because they're talking about then specific organs that may affect specific organs that a person of a particular dosha must be mindful of. So I'll use your word mindful now. So since we have established Ajit and myself are Pitta folks, for us, the subtype doshas are the stomach, the liver, the heart, the eyes, and the skin, right?
Oh, no. This is a little confusing and I completely get it, but this doesn't work this way. To give you a better...
Exactly my question. That's why. That's why. Because it's confusing now. That's why we're going to greater entry. Yeah.
But you're right about the subtypes of dosha, but these doshas, so understand that we are talking doshas in a lot of aspects. So one we talked about dosha is your body type, which is your Vata Pitta Kapha, which becomes your prakriti. And which dosha is more dominated in your body, that's become your prakriti. And let's say if one of the doshas is imbalanced in your body right now, then it is your vikriti currently, which is your problem area right now. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's your prakriti. And so we talk about the, and that gives you more understanding of your own body. For example, a Vata person is always like a thin person. They will always have dry skin and dry hair, and their nails will also break easily. Their teeth are kind of weak and bones do not have that much of strong, and they have a bony structure, and they have cold hands and cold feet. So, and their mind is also all over the place. They have 100 interest area and they're super creative though, but they talk very fast. They walk very fast. They do everything very, very fast. You know, they don't have chill only. And Vata people also jump from one thing to another so easily. And like psychologically, they tend to overthink so much and they have anxiety issues. And you look at Pitta people who are very moderately built, who are very, their skin are more reddish tone to it. They have a luster in their skin and their eye. And they're very focused people. They're very driven people. They have so much passion because that fire in them keeps them passionate. But you'd notice that their skin may also have acne or a breakout or pimples or acidity issues, or they might have like allergies to random things. And their stomach is also super sensitive. It can react to anything, you know? And they get hungry so easily because the fire digests the food that they eat. And their hands and their feet will always be warm. And these guys also tend to lose their hair because of all the heat, because the heat has to escape from someplace. And the biggest psychological thing that happens, neurological thing, is that they have temperament issue. They have anger issue because that fire has to go up somewhere, right? So if they don't channelize it properly, their thoughts and their emotions, they kind of sit on that. Anger and jealousy and hate and these kind of emotions, when they are unresolved, then they end up actually storing, this information is stored more in our liver, more than anything. And you would see a lot of Pitta people have liver-related issues then. And of course, then if you're continuing adding alcohol to it, which your liver is even more than problematic, and then alcohol is also adding to your unresolved emotions, then it's a really like a worse case. And then your Kapha people, who are completely opposite to Vata in characteristic, they are a little heavier, in terms of their body. They're also, while Vata is all dry skin and dry hair, Kapha people are oily skin and a baby soft, smooth skin. And they have thick, wavy hair. And if you look at their digestion is slower metabolism, slower appetite, slower everything. They talk slowly. And they're very like grounded and they have more strength in their body in comparison to a Vata person. And the only common property they have with Vata, while everything is opposite, only common thing that they have is they both have cold hands and cold feet. right? Only Pitta people will have warm hands, warm feet. So if you look at your dosha in terms of understanding body type, it's easier to understand. And how do you identify somebody's dosha is by three things. By darshana, when you look at a person, as I said, when you have a characteristic you can look at. When you so one is darshan, when you look at somebody, you can tell what their body type is. Second is prashna, which the, you know, that Harry Potter quiz or what Harry Potter character you are, what Friends character you are. So we ask these questions. So we know that your metabolism or your digestion or how you're sleeping. A Vata person doesn't sleep properly. They're insomniac and they're very light sleep. A Kapha can be a little nice heavy sleeper. So that's why you'll also be able to ask questions and find what their dosha is. But the most accurate way of finding somebody's dosha is Nadi Parikshan, Sparshana. So Darshana, Prashna and Sparshana. So Sparshan, Nadi Parikshan, when they actually check their pulse, and in the pulse there are proper patterns and all, and Ayurvedic doctors and Nadi Parikshak, they are very experts in this. They are able to tell what is your Prakriti, what you were born with, and what is your current Vikriti, what you need to balance it. So it's a very scientific approach to it. They already know how much pulse, and pulse has a patterns in it. So they experience, they actually learn that and they're able to do this. But the doshas, sub-doshas you're talking about, now they are more of your doshas as a fundamental units or a bioenergies that are doing all governing our physiological function. So when you are talking about pitta ke sub-dosh, then you have, let's say you have a pachaka pitta, which is responsible for your digestion. Now imagine where the digestion is happening in our body. It's happening in our stomach area, mainly stomach and intestine area. That's why you see that the seat of pitta there is, you know, mentioning about the intestine and stomach area. Then you talk about ranjaka pitta, which is more about the providing the red color to our red blood cells, and also giving the color to our skin and eyes as well. Eyes actually is more alochaka pitta, and skin is more bhrajaka pitta. But ranjaka, agar kisi ke paas proper blood cells ka wo nahi hoga, to the skin will look pale basically. So that's also a problem area. So now your pitta is also present in your, technically, the liver, which basically, take the old blood cells, unko heme, globin ko heme alag karta hai, globin alag karta hai. Your bile is formed then as a waste product. And then, it is helping you absorb all of that as well. So liver is kind of a biggest, one of the very significant detox organ in our body. And if you look at sadhaka pitta, which is your, about your mind pitta, it's present in your brain. So that's what is helping us stay that focused and passionate and conscious thinking and emotions ka comprehension. So, so it is nothing to relate with a body type, but you have to see while there are sub doshas, it's for understanding the physiological functions. Your alochaka pitta is for your eyes. So of course, your whatever the color of your eye or your perception, how well you're able to focus when you're looking at something. So that is about pitta. And let's say I am a complete vata person, for example. I do have eyesight issue, right? I have chashma. And now that's because of my alochaka pitta. At some point, I've gotten imbalanced. And that is why I have an eyesight issue. Or let's say if I develop a skin issue, that means my bhrajaka pitta may get imbalanced. If it's too much or if it's too less or if it's disturbed. So same way you have kledaka kapha and tarpaka kapha and bodhana kapha, and you have prana vayu and apan vayu, saman vayu. They all have functions in our body. So we read them, we understand them. So in my tumor, like in my advanced class of Ayurveda, I also explain people about these sub doshas, because this gives you even more deeper understanding your body. How does it work? So when I talk about prana vayu, which is the first sub doshas in the vata category, vata and vayu are same, by the way. So when we talk about prana vayu, now prana vayu, prana itself means life force. And this prana vayu is responsible for actually your inhaling your oxygen, and that oxygen reaching out to every cell of our body. Vata function is to also do movement. So that movement of oxygen in our body is happening because of prana vayu. And then it talks about that if your prana vayu is disturbed, if it is not in balance, then what will you experience? Then a lot of people will that time experience issues like breath issues. They will also probably will feel emotions, not feeling proper proper emotions as well. And they will may also have experience anxiety and fear and anger if the prana vayu gets disordered. And you know, breathlessness, when you feel palpitation or when you're not able to catch your breath, it is probably because of your prana vayu imbalance. In case of obesity and pregnancy, it's clear that, you know, you will always experience breathlessness. But if you're experienced, and obesity is also a pathological issue, while pregnancy isn't. And a lot of other issues where you realize when you're feeling breathless, or you can actually, something which is involuntary, a heart movement, and you're able to hear your dhadkan, that means there's a pathological issue with it. Unless you're exercising or you're doing something very, which is causing your breath to, your heart to beat faster. So that's the thing. So understanding this gives us more clear knowledge about how do we actually, if there are disorders, if you constantly feel breathless, if you constantly feel this anxiety and fear and feeling low and feeling absolutely, you know, or depression as well, then in that case, understanding what pranavayu is and how do I balance it gives me more more hope in life, technically. So one biggest way, because now we are on the topic, so one biggest way of balancing your pranavayu is pranayam, because that's the breath work. When you control your breath, inhale and exhale, and hold the breath, and there's a proper way to do pranayam, and everybody should learn it actually from an expert. So when we learn the pranayam the right way, then you would know that you're able to control your breath, and in turn, you're able to control your mind as well and your emotions as well, right? So that's the thing, that these subtypes will give you clearer understanding of your body and to take care of each and every imbalances that come in daily life. So that's that.
No, that's really nice, because so, if you...
Yeah, this is really great. And I think what I'm taking away roughly from this conversation, Amrita, is that, see, if you look at Ayurveda, then it essentially looks at three ways to, quote-unquote, examine a person. You look at the person, you talk to the person, and you touch and feel the person through their pulse. And therefore determine certain attributes. And I believe whenever this was found, this was probably the state-of-the-art way of doing it, because... Especially if I look at, you know, examination, which consists of questions and looking and touching. The folks who, you know, found Ayurvedic principles, the Charaka or Dhanvantri, they probably didn't have access to CT scans or MRI scanning machines. Yeah. And this is what they could do to the best of their abilities at that point in time. Right. And therefore, there are a series of guidelines that are prescribed, which are better suited based on characterization of whole host of people, based on which they've divided people into three categories of dosha, pitta, vata, and kapha. And these are again based on, I'm assuming, a good amount of statistical sampling. Now, of course, since thousands of years, times have changed. You know, the food patterns have changed, our bodies have changed, we have evolved as organisms, the environment around us is very, very different. But the certain, fundamental guidelines continue to remain similar, right? And I believe now what I'm gathering is that it is up to us how to adapt those principles in our current times, right? So I think when you mentioned about tomatoes, it's really interesting, because it's not, because tomatoes weren't there, you know, 300 years ago. But does that mean, Ayurveda has to talk about tomatoes? No, not about tomatoes, but the concept of night seeds that you mentioned, which is available in other things that were available long, long ago. So those concepts could still be applied. And, you know, we take a call based on what my body type is. And I really love this relation between what goes into your body, which is the food, which controls blood flow, your sugar metabolism, and that manifests in your sleep and your behavior. So I really love this whole holistic way of looking at our health, that food is a major player in our physical, mental, psychological health. And that is really, really fascinating to me. The other thing that I really appreciate you telling us very clearly is that Ayurveda does not mean you go, you know, hardcore vegetarian. There is room for meat. It's just that depending on what your body type is and what your doshas are, how you adapt best and how you follow these principles to lead a healthier sort of lifestyle. Earlier, I used to be a skeptic about various things. I used to be binary. I mean, this is crap, yaar, me kya ye? And now it's like I'm slowly starting to realize that looking at it in its absolute sense, it's good to, you know, understand the kind of situation and the environment that person was in while developing these things. And now, how? What are the positives that I can take away from it, and what are the approximate guidelines that I can take away and try to follow and lead a healthy lifestyle? But having said that, I'm guessing you're in Indore, and I bet you can't wait for that food market or Sarafa Bazaar to open and then go binge on certain things. I'll totally understand.
Absolutely. While like now with this idea, like knowing that eating such late night and eating such heavy foods like garadu and bhutte ka keys and kachoris wouldn't work for my system because Ayurveda says so, is one thing. But also because I've always had went to Sarafa late in the night and 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the night. And I have always binged on those dishes and it's been great. You know, it's a part of like a culture as well. So I don't know what to like follow and what to. So what I try to do is I do everything that my body tells me to do. If I feel like eating crap food, I would eat crap food. If I feel like taking care of myself, giving myself only khichdi because I've eaten something crap yesterday or in the morning, then I do that. I've started. So I think what I have learned from this is just understanding, just become more mindful about your body and listen to it more. You know, I actually, one thing that I majorly changed in my life was actually, you know, one rule. As I said, you know, Ayurveda talks about there is general ways of rule of eating. One of them is you should not talk while you're eating. Now, ideally, if Ayurveda was written right now, they would also would have mentioned that you shouldn't watch TV while eating food, or you shouldn't be on your phone constantly, you know, you shouldn't be scrolling through your Instagram when you are eating your meal. So this is what I tell everybody now these days is that if you want to just do that and I understand why are we doing this when we are more mindful. And I find, and this is my own example, this is not something where I've read, this is something I've experienced it myself. So I bring that knowledge. When I say that, you know, I have noticed when I would go to a theater to watch a movie, and I'm a big movie buff, I would watch every movie, you know, I would watch, and then you'd go and you'd order a, like a whole tub of popcorn and a, like a large cola because, well, the medium and small size is only 10 rupees difference and you're getting double the cola. So, you'd buy, you know? So I would go and buy that, and I would notice that how in the 2 hours movie, I finished the thing like probably in like only half an hour or 1 hour, you know, and how does that happen? Because if I sit without a movie, and if I sit with that bigger tub of popcorn and a big cola, I won't be able to finish it if I have nothing else to do. So that's when you realize that there is this thing about when your mind is distracted, when it is somewhere else, then you tend to overeat. You tend to also very mindlessly eat, basically. So if I just put that real practical example, then people are actually able to relate to it. And then I would say that, so on everyday basis, this one change that I brought is something that when I am, and you know me, I'm addicted to my Instagram. I have to like talk about what I'm eating and what I'm, you know, I take pictures and I do all of that. But I would first take a picture quickly and then keep my phone aside. And then I would just eat the meal. And I also know that it's not possible to change everyone at home because not everybody's on same page and they're used to it. My dadi was like 90. Now I can't ask her to shut off the TV because while you're eating. And I also, it's just difficult for any new, older people to adapt also. So then in that case, I just, you know, even if the TV is on, I don't watch TV. I would just focus on my food. And just by doing that, my body will tell me that it does it require the third roti or the fourth roti or no? Or does it require anything else at this stage? You know, so your body starts guiding you when you are in sync with it, when you are listening to it. So it's like that. So I am trying to find more newer and more relevant ways to apply this. I've understood you're right. There is a lot of like evolution that has happened since 5,000 years, you know. And while they say the information, and this is a mythology concept that the Ayurveda knowledge was passed from Dhanvantri gods to, you know, a lot of people, some disciples, and one of them was, let's say, Sushruta and Charak and whosoever. But the thing is, while that's part which is like a little unbelievable, because I also personally feel that mythology is a nice storytelling for us to have a faith so that we do things. For example, telling me to do a Navratri fast for all the matas each day and celebrate goddesses. But I know that now that there is a seasonal principle that Vasant Ritu Meya later on in Sharad Ritu, that our body needs that detoxing. And so the fasting season were, and because, but they had to sell a story in a better way, right? They couldn't say, log chahiye rational cheeze. Ab magar people who don't have a rational idea and who don't follow these things, unko chahiye hota hai fir ye faith. कि क्योंकि हमें बोला गया, क्योंकि हमें कहा गया, you know, so easily, but if you start understanding why you're doing it, then it's just easier to follow. So what I am trying to do is, because by reading so much, when I am learning that this is all applicable, abhi mujhe itna pata chal gaya ki ice creams, for example, I know in my body, if I have ice creams, that I know that I will have a little phlegm issue, a little cough issue, you know, and it will be heavier for body, because the vata person is already cold in nature. So, and then kapha person, if you continue to give them more cold things, so your channels will get blocked even more. Vaise hi movement ka problem hai. Vaise hi kapha mein heavier hai, toh metabolism slow hai. To upar se agar ice cream ya thandi cheeze, fridge cold cheeze denge, to wo aapke channels ko block karega. So, I understand the science why they're asking to avoid it, you know. But once in a while, I'm going to live my life, because ultimately today, I'm just going to find a better sources. I will have a fruit-based gelato, or I'll have a absolutely fresh, natural, rather than having chemical or like flavored, artificially flavored things. Rather than having that or having a loaded cream laden things, I will. So I made a mango kulfi at home day before, which is like just reducing my milk with basic spice and adding mango puree to it and freezing it. Now while it's cold and it's heavy and everything, I made sure that I don't have it in the night, in the evening. Yeah. And this was such a big part of our Indore culture. We used to step out after 10, 11 p.m. to go and eat ice creams. Yeah. My life I've done this. And now to not have ice cream because your conscience is now just telling you that, hey, Ayurveda says so. And then it also is like a little, you know, like a, I don't know, not a placebo effect, but more of like a psychosomatic thing. That now that I know that ice cream can do this because Ayurveda says so, I will for sure have a cough issue next day. Or my throat will be gone. You know, so I'm like, bahut hi dodhari talwar hai ye. How much to follow, to follow. But I think everybody just should go a little easy. Take whatever you can take, apply whatever you can apply, because it's all good information. But don't overdo. So what you know, Dalai Lama says that everything should be done in moderation, even moderation. That resonates with me so well.
Yeah, both of us, and you know, love that quote that you said. Eat everything in moderation, because that portion control and moderation is what even I, you know, tell everyone when people ask me about food or diets or things like that. The thing I wanted to ask you next about, and I think I'm slowly getting a hang of it from as you're talking about it, is the foods that people, you know, should favor or tend to consume less of. And I'm making the connection in my head. So for example, if I am a pitta person, you know, I have a lot of fire in me and heat and which, you know, leads to anger but also has creative and other things in it. So then the things that are at least said that one should avoid are mostly, if I'm looking at it, are citrus fruits, because they're acidic, right? So it says that avoid acidic foods like lemons or any of these citrus fruits, I mean, or take less of rather than just avoid blanketly. And also things that are more heat producing, like radishes or garlic or the things in that family. So I think I'm seeing that connection now as to why you would say that you must reduce some of these heat producing foods in your diet, because your body naturally has way more heat than others. Is that a proper reading?
It is mostly yes, because now that what you've understood is that you've understood how your body works and how a certain foods will bring more heat to your body, and so you want to avoid it. This is exactly a proper logical explanation of this concept. There is, of course, a little more detailed information out there in terms of, there is this thing called dosh, like viruddha ahar, which is basically, viruddha means opposing, and ahar means food.
Food.
So food that are opposing or food that are incompatible either together or for our body, right? So for example, one of the, like, there is of course a list of things, which is, let's say, milk should never be paired with sour fruits. That's a viruddha ahar. And we also know that when we actually mix a lemon or an orange or anything sour in your milk, it will fat jayega. So the milk ka jo actual benefit jo in its form you could get, you won't get it, right? So, and then you know that the one of the viridharas, milk and banana should never be paired together. And as a kid, we knew that banana milkshake to mummy ne diya, mummy kaise galat ho sakti hai, right? But now that Ayurveda explains it, like there's a more detailed thing that they both are very heavy for our body. The banana and the milk, they both are very heavy. So by adding these two heavy things, it might still fit for Vata people or slightly, but it could be too heavy for our body. And then in a long term, you will have kapha related issues. And for some people, it could be a weight issue. Or some people, it could be also a phlegm or a chronic congestion issue as well. So there is a proper list of these things of Viruddha Ahar. But also we need to understand there are a lot of types of Viruddha which is explained. So one of them is, for example, Dosha Viruddha. So let's say you, as you rightly explained, if you are a Pitta body type and if you constantly give yourself things which are going to increase your Pitta, and you know what can increase the Pitta, that are more heaty in nature. So that is your chilies families and peppers and garlic and onion and a lot of other things which are heaty in nature. So then you would know that, or fermented foods, your alcohol and all of the fermented things that are super heaty in body, idli, dosa, all of that batters also. So now having more of this might increase your pitta more, and that means it can cause you either a stomach related digestion issue, it may cause you skin related issue, it may cause you temperament kind of issue. So that's why a dosha viruddha is happening. A person, a vata person who's very light and dry in nature, if they constantly have drying foods that dry you out, like roasted things, roasted chana or roasted things, super dry things, that can actually vitiate them, or a coffee, super dehydrating for a person. And for a vata person, it is not only dehydrating for them, and also caffeine also messes with your vata of your mind. So they feel even more agitated and jittery. These are the people who would absolutely not sleep at all. And this is me actually. If I've had coffee after, let's say 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if anytime after 3 o'clock, I will not be able to sleep in the night at all, because it affects me differently than it will affect you. So what Ayurveda gives you understanding, and these doshas give you understanding, is who will it suit? So dosha viruddha happens that way. If you're already kapha type, you already have enough fat in the body. If you constantly then excess sweet things or excess fat, oily things and cold things, because kapha is also cold in nature. If you have that, your kapha and your body will increase. And for them, the first thing they see is a weight gain. And weight gain also happens slowly, and the weight loss is even more slower. So it's difficult. So dosha viruddha can happen. Then there is something called desh viruddha, where you are born, wherever you are, whichever country, whichever city you are born in. So that's why eating local foods become imperative and super important for us, because the foods that are grown here are actually much suited to our bodies. And if we continue to eat more imported foods, then it won't suit as much. So an avocado toast can be a healthier thing for like the whole of the rest of the world. But if those avocados are constantly coming from Peru and different places, then probably it's not going to suit your Indian body so much. You will probably do much better with the good fats that are present here, which could be, let's say, your ghee and your shakarkand and different kind of things that will help you much more. So that's the whole idea of Viruddha. Then there's also Kal Viruddha. What time are you having? If let's say, if during the Pitta time, even the days, the daytime has the dosha basically. So for example, your morning 2 a.m. to your 6 a.m., 2 to 6 a.m. and 2 to 6 p.m. both, they are considered Vata time, where Vata is more dominated. So that's why when you get up before 6 a.m. and Vata energy is very light and very quick and very moving, that's why getting up before 6 a.m. in the Vata time gives you more energy in your body. So more mind, more creative thoughts, and more feeling light and energetic. But we get up late, which is 6 to 10 a.m. ka time, which is the Kapha dominant time. And it's already kapha time. And if you continue to have a heavy kapha increasing breakfast, which is, let's say, all heavy breakfast, your parathas to your breads to a lot of these things, then that may increase your kapha and may cause you imbalance. And then you have 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and also 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. where it's considered as pitta time. In the morning, we know that sun is on sharp, so you feel more pitta in the body. That's when you need to start cooling down your body. And also in the night, when a body goes into the sleep mode, the liver is one of the pitta organ. So liver functions much more in the night as detoxing our body. it throws out all the toxins out of our body. And that's why in the morning you'd have like the whole, you'd have like a, on your bile, which is produced by liver, is giving the color to your feces and the urine. And your tongue is coated with a white coating in the morning, which is again, your body's trying to pour the extra armor out of your body, extra toxins out of the body. So that's a beautiful understanding of how it all functions. So when your days have doshas, the different timings have doshas, which is dominated. So you can also eat as per that dosha that time. So eating something which is heavy in the dinner time, which is your kapha time, and which is 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., then it can be very difficult for body to digest it that time. Right, so this gives you this studying of Viruddhahar gives you even more deeper understanding. Processing of food also does matter. Your honey should never be heated as per Ayurveda. And if you look at comparison to rice, for example, processing, I'll give you a better example, which is a rice example. Rice, when it's in cooked form, you would see that it is sweet, it is little heavy, it is cooling for our body. So that means it's going to balance your pitta, it's going to balance your kapha, but then it's going to balance your vata, but it may affect your kapha, it may increase your kapha a bit. We do need kapha. Kapha also means, it doesn't mean only fat. It means all our bones, muscles, tissues, cells, hair, nails, bones, everything. So we do need kapha in our body as well. But excess of it can be, of course, a problem because the body tends to store it in the form of medh or medha, which is fat. So that's why understanding that rice, when it's in cooked form, it is working this way, that it is heavy, it is sweet, and it is unctuous. It is a little slightly oily in nature. It is soft and it is smooth. And so it is favoring this vata person more and a pitta person more. But if you look at the same rice in dry form, let's say in a murmura or in a parmal, we call it, it is dry in nature. It is so light in nature. Right? So that means that ways it can actually decrease your kapha and can actually increase your vata. So the processing of that grain, and if you look at poha,
so,
which
so
is
Ayurveda automatically makes room for chaat, because chaat has a lot of murmura. This is wonderful. So, please go on.
Yeah, so even let's say oats, na? Oats be dry form, may will help you reduce your kapha. So that's why weight loss ke liye oats work. But in its cooked form or it's in porridge form or whatever form, it's very slimy and heavy and thick for us. Then it can actually increase your kapha. Right? So understanding the processing of food also affects how it will be taken by our body. So that's why Ayurveda gives you much more clearer understanding of these things in by learning about Viruddha Ahar. By understanding what will suit and how should we go about it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, fabulous. And Ajit, Ayurveda for Pitta people like us also says no fermented rice, which means no more Davangere Benne Dosa for you.
To you. but one thing that I'm...
That's a very Pitta thing to say. Screw you, I'm going to do what I want to do.
See, I have a lot of fire inside me.
But guys, now this is another thing. You don't need to change the way you eat. There's a body, you know, the way we end up eating on a regular basis, our body gets used to it. If you are, let's say, if you're a South Indian person and you've always had fermented rice and idli and dosa and appams and different things, and you've had coconut milk based things and all, your body is kind of also used to you know, finally working with that. Abhi usko pata chal chuka hai ki yaar mujhe ye heavy khana hi dene wale hai ya mujhe ye fermented food hi dene wale hai, and I'll have to work it around. So your body is adapted to it also. So this concept of satmya, which is your body's familiarity with certain something. So even if you have to remove something from your daily meals, or if you have to introduce something, you have to do it very gradually. You can't shock your body. You know, then you'll get withdrawal symptoms.
Have cravings and withdrawal symptoms and things like that.
Then you'll feel like an headache and you'll feel like a very discomfort. And then you'll loathe it so much that even then when you're eating something which is right for you, won't suit you only. Because the emotions are not well going with it. So you can't like change immediately just like that. And also, if your body is used to it, if your digestion is okay, if your health is pretty much on point, then don't change anything about it. Because probably what you're doing in your eating your fermented foods, you're also balancing it properly by probably eating other things. So body finds its own way. When you crave for something, it's for balancing some dosha. Of course, then we have gotten into all psychological cravings, because when we look at if I look at a Calabrese pizza from Pizza Express, I want to eat it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my psychological thing. That's not my body telling me it needs pizza at this time. But yes, if my body's telling you that I feel like eating something sweet or something sour or something salty, it's a body sign of telling you that it needs to balance some dosha in there, you know? Yeah. So that's what I understand from this. So you guys continue having what you are having unless and until you have some ailment that you want to cover or something that's bothering it, something chronic ailment that you're looking at. Then you need to probably correct it. Otherwise, your body is good. It's if you're listening to it, if you're properly nourishing it and taking care of your digestion, then you're good to go, guys.
No, I'm recollecting now because like a few years ago, me and some friends, you know, we had made a trip to Kerala. And someone else booked, one person booked the tickets, one person booked the accommodation. So we went to this place and, you know, it was cheap and that's why we took it as this resort. But what we didn't realize that it was an Ayurvedic resort. And so, you know, we went there and then we all had to go see a doctor. And so this doctor now it's kind of coming back to me, as you say, you know, he asked us questions, he checked our pulse, he looked at our, you know, put a torchlight into our eyes and stuff like that. And then, you know, he had a chat. He said, okay, go. So we're like, okay, what's up for doctor? This is kind of interesting. Anyway, we go to a resort, they give you a welcome drink. We went to the resort, they asked us to see a doctor. And then afterwards, you know, when it was lunchtime, we went and everyone got different things. So I got like a lot of Karela, you know, bitter gourd sabzi, and which I absolutely hate. But luckily there was like a cabbage, carrot, curry as well to go with the rice. And my friends didn't get the same. They got something else. And because like I say, I love garlic and onions and things that I didn't get any of that. So my food didn't have any garlic or onions in it. Whereas my friends, you know, they had. And so I was like, what is this kind of thing? Now it's, and again, we didn't think too much of it because again, we were boys. We wanted to just go to the beach and have fun and all that. So we just ate and just moved over there and ate something outside later. But now it's kind of clicking, you know, to me as I'm kind of winding the years back saying, I see what the whole connection is to that.
Yeah, that's kind of true. So also with these resorts and all, because it's also like fairly a new concept to go to like these resorts and like probably have a staycations and things like that. So, but the thing is, it's also more as like they're trying to do a little experiential thing for you guys, right? They're trying to say, so by doing that first thing as a testing the, you know, your dosha and understanding what will suit, what won't suit. And of course, that by giving you one meal or two meals or three meals in whatever days that you're staying, it's not going to make so much of a difference, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But they're just trying to give you that whole experience around it. And some people who are super receptive, they're like, oh, really? It doesn't suit me. So then they'll go back home and they'll also tend to follow it. And specifically in this higher end Ayurveda resorts where, you know, like let's say Jindal, which is again Bangalore, Kismet, and there are a lot of in Kerala as well where you go. And then there's Atmantan and there's, you know, in mountains, there is, in Himalayas, there is Ananda. And they charge insane amount of money, like going up to like a lakh a day and that kind of rates, you know. So, and very high these things, these places are, where they are again, but they ask you to take like a longer packages because you're going that as a majorly, as of course, like a chutti, but also as a proper detoxing from your regular world. So then they'll ask you to stay for like, let's say minimum of a week or 15 days or a month or even 3 months, you know, and people stay there. And when they have that kind of food on a regular basis, and then food coupled with, along with other Ayurvedic treatments, you know, a Shirodhara for somebody or a certain Ayurvedic massage for somebody or a certain different, there are a lot of types of Ayurvedic treatments, and all of them that when it's coupled with that, when it's also coupled with the yoga in the morning and getting up early and like the whole holistic thing, then people see the result. So that's why you would see a lot of like these, I know a very like people who can afford this kind of rates, they tend to, they go once a year and they wo jaisa hota na ki ganga chale gaye paap dhone ke liye apne, like similarly they just go to these Ayurvedic resorts and all, and while they must be eating crap all the entire year long, whatever, but when they go there, it's like their 15 days detox and whatever that works for them, you know. So, but on a few days, I don't think it can really do much more of a difference. And as I said, even when I pop up, I do. And it's only that one meal and I've done a ticketed event. Now, if I'm doing that, if not in one meal, किसी का कोई दोषा बैलेंस नहीं हो जाएगा, किसी कुछ हो नहीं जाएगा. सो व्हाट आई ट्राई टू डू इज आई ट्राई बिकॉज माय पर्पस टू डू एंड दिस इज समथिंग व्हिच हैज हैपेंड वेरी effortlessly and very like not thinking so much into it, but I realized that this is what I like about this, that I am learning such this beautiful information, and if I can make it more if I can share it in a way which people will understand it better, and also which also helps me in my life as well, then it means that I can actually, even through my pop-ups, they're more educational than actually experiential. Because I will tell them that so which produce that I've used, it is a super seasonal thing. This is a very local thing. I will then source it from different places. I will come up with community recipes. And then I would tell them that why am I serving you dessert first? Because Ayurveda says eat dessert first. Because more digestive juices will flow. And your sugar also will neutralize the plate, the acid this that's on an empty stomach. So I talked about these principles. And then I made a santre ki kheer in one of my pop-up. Now everybody, when they saw the menu, and they'll be like, dude, you only say that milk should never be paired with saaf roots. And my point was exactly that I made my kheer with almond milk. I actually made almond milk from scratch, and I cooked it down like a rabdi, and then added my santra to it. But to just make that point that Ayurveda believes that we should not have dairy with our saaf roots, but I wanted to put that point across, but also do it interestingly and serve you something different. So here's my santra. And then to make it fancy, I topped it with like a cacao brittle with little chili flakes and sea salt and lavender and things. Because, hey, hashtag Instagram. But and food styling, again, because something I've done professionally. So it also helps me see that how the pictures will come when people will share. And because my work is very Instagram based, my food is also designed in a way that people will share it about it. So I give extra focus on developing recipes, but also finding the presentation for it, you know? And that's the reason when I post it, like, people are like willing to come for the next one, right? Yeah. So it becomes a whole package that way.
That's good. And so I wanted to take us back to our first episode, like when we started doing the series of podcasts. Is our first episode was on tastes, okay? And we went through the five tastes, and that's when we kind of hit upon it that the world knows the five tastes, the East knows the sixth. So in India, because of Ayurveda, you have the astringent as a taste, whereas if you go far east, you know, they bring umami as their sixth taste. But otherwise, you know, the tastes everyone else knows are sweet, sour, salty, pungent, bitter, and we have astringent as well. Now, what's interesting to me is the thing that you mentioned about digestion, right? Is that it's about this post-digestive effect that it has before the process of excretion, and that's what, you know, the effect of that is, you know, is what happens to where it goes. So here, this is where I wanted to bring you in, and probably as we more near to the end of our discussions, talking about these tastes before we end, of how these tastes, you know, affect their diets, and more, not only just the diets, but also how the tastes affect you as what kind of a person you are, to, you know, like I said, not avoid, but what tastes you should have in moderation, and what we should encourage because of the person you are. Now, I can see now because of the pitta, the sweet taste balances more because of a cooling effect and all that. But why don't you just take us through that a bit?
All right. So the thing with so these tastes are called ras or rasa. And the concept is shad rasa, which is sixth taste. So there are total six tastes, as you already mentioned, and each taste has a certain effect on each dosha as well. So while these tastes that we, of course, eat through different foods have certain functions in our body. So the sweet taste that we eat, which is the madhur ras, it actually nourishes us. And that's why it's such a prime taste. And that's why, in fact, most of the food that we eat breaks down ultimately to the glucose and gives us the energy. So that's why the sweet taste actually nourishes our cell. It is very important for our growth. The mother's taste, the mother's milk, which is the first thing that we drink, is also sweet in taste. And so that becomes about the sweet. And then you have sour, which actually helps you in digestion also. It also helps you in your keeping your mind alert. It also helps in salivation. If you'll eat something sour, you'll see that there's more saliva, and more saliva means digestive juices, more enzyme activity will happen. And then if you look at salty helps you in your blood pressure regulation, your basically electrolyte balance in your body. And salt is also flavoring your food. Salt majorly also helps in your saliva. If there is no salt, then you will not be able to taste any other taste in your food. If then the salt is not proper, right? Because your perception of salt is super important. And then you talk about bitter foods help you in removing the toxins out of your body, which is also super important because your ama is constantly being produced and you need to chuck that out. And if you look at pungent, which is spicy, again stimulates our digestion, but what it also does is it clears our channels so well. That's why when you eat something so spicy food, you'd start like your eyes will start watering, your nose will start running, right? So that's because spicy food can have that kind of function in our body. So clearing out our channels, it means also internal channels. That means if there's anything which is blocked, your ama in your body, it will all start clearing out as well. And if you look at the last stage, which is the astringent. Now, astringent, while it's a difficult to like pinpoint what is the taste, like how umami is, you know, it's difficult to explain umami to a person who's never come across umami word. So, but the astringent is basically like a more a sensation, which is a drying sensation on your tongue. So most vegetables are astringent in nature, but some of them are very significantly, you can see very astringent. Like for example, when you eat jamun or when you eat anar, pomegranate, or even a raw banana, would you see that your drying of the tongue happens much more than others? Because they are more astringent in nature. And what is astringent doing in our body? It is helping us in binding of our stools. So that is also super important for us. So each trace has certain function in our body, and they also have a certain effect on our doshas. So sweet, sour, salty, they decrease your vata dosha. They balance your vata dosha, but they increase your kapha. Yeah, sweet, sour, salty. And that's why excess of it can increase too much kapha. That's why people who eat too much of sweet and salty food tend to go obese, because kapha is getting imbalanced in the body. And if you look, and because they're completely opposite, so sweet, sour, salty will, bitter, pungent, astringent will reduce kapha out of the body, but will increase vata in our body, right? And if you look at the sweet, bitter, and astringent will reduce pitta, but sour, salty, and spicy will increase pitta. So I know it's a little confusing, but
I can see that. I can see the direct correlation to the spicy and the sweet. Yeah, and
that is why Ayurveda says that eat all the six tastes in your one meal, because it will have a certain effect on each doshas. So you start with your sweet, but you eat all the six tastes. That's why the Indian thali becomes so like a sacred thing for us, because it kind of is nourishing us because of all the variety of the foods. It's colorful, so it's also pleasing for our senses, and it's because it also has all the six tastes, so that it balances a certain have effect on each dosha, and you feel more nourished and more rejuvenated than anything else. So that's the reason why taste is so important. And you're right also about when you talked about the post digestive effect. So I just to wind up this whole thing, there is this, so any food, when we look at modern nutrition, has a simple way of looking at your food, which is what is its breakdown nutrient components of it. So it's got this vitamin, this mineral, this fiber, this much protein, this much carbs, all of that. But Ayurveda, we don't talk about these things at all. So what we talk about is this four parameters. What is its rasa? That means what is it taste? Because we already know if it is sweet, it's going to balance your vata and your pitta. If it is bitter, it is going to increase your kapha. It is reducing your kapha, but increase vata. Or it will also reduce your pitta. So we know the effect of it. So we can look at any ingredient. If it is sweet in taste, we know it will manage the vata and pitta person. So you know that by looking at a rasa, you can tell which grain, which food will suit which doshas. Then there is guna, which is the properties. So as I already spoke about the rice example, if it is heavy, if it is light, if it's dry, if it's oily, if it is. So different guna, different properties of it. There are total 20 gunas of in this parameters that we have studied about. Then you have virya, which is the potency of food. We have already learned the vata people and kapha people are usually warm, are usually cold in nature, and pitta is warm in nature. That means cooling foods will favor pitta people, warming foods will favor kapha and vata people. And also season, right now is the pitta season. So cooling things will suit all of us right now, despite your vata, pitta or kapha. So you don't go so technical, you start looking at these things, nature and more everyday thing. And the last parameters is vipaka, which is the post-digestive effect of whatever you eat, what happens when it is all broken down and assimilated and absorbed, what happens in our body, what is the effect of its post-digestion, if there is anything specific. And it is most visible, most evident in the case of chili families. You know, they're so spicy and the post-digestive effect of it is also so spicy that you will feel it next day also, your intestine will burn. You'll feel that sensation while passing your stools. So that's the reason that we compare all the grains, all the foods. When we look at what is its Ayurvedic property, we look at all these four parameters, and these texts are already there in Sanskrit. But let's say if you are in Sanskrit texts in Ayurveda, but let's say if you're talking about newer ingredients, let's say rocket leaves, just jo India mein to nahi the. And now we look at rocket leaves, then I can tell that, oh, the bitter pungent taste of it can actually help me reduce my kapha. You know, and it can actually, and it's pretty light, so it can also then suit the kapha person as well. It might not be difficult, it might be difficult for a vata person. So you're able to look at these parameters and are able to tell who will it suit. It's heaty in nature, so that way vata and kapha will be happy, but a pitta can probably get a little too much for them, you know. So you're able to also apply the same principles. So as I said, Ayurveda is more about understanding it deeper and applying those principles in your daily life and your newer ingredients. Because as you said, agriculture advancement, the evolution and the markets and the world is shrinking. And we have newer and newer things which we never saw in our kitchens earlier. Quinoa, we didn't even know about it. Quinoa, there was some grain called quinoa in our. Or even while growing up, we didn't even have oats that time. And now oats, everybody is making oats at home in India also. You know, and of course, that's because of all the whole agriculture stuff and because US produced so much oats and they had to market it as the healthiest grain. And if you're eating healthy and if you're not eating oats, what are you even doing, love? And so they're doing, so the oats have become a great PR machinery behind it, you know. So that's what has happened with our body and in terms of applying the Ayurveda principles in a more practical and relevant and more more just today's more contemporary way. That's what I would say.
No, that's really interesting because, you know, compared to, unlike the two of you, I live outside of India. So for me, eating local here, and I do eat local, I try to as much. And so now if I think about it, let's say like a parsley, that's probably a little more astringent. And maybe let's say basil, you know, because we get a lot of fresh basil, which grows now, it grows like wild in the summer here. So if I make like a basil pesto, that's probably, yeah, I can see that now. That's more towards the cooling side of it. So, you can apply these profiles to vegetables or fruits or, you know, across geographic locations where you are, and you can eat accordingly. So I don't get a gongura here, but I do get parsley and I do get basil, and I can see how that will align with me.
Exactly. So that's about that. And that's why what I'm trying to do is giving this, whatever I have learned, and giving this in a more like a palatable, more easier way to understand. So you can apply it anywhere, wherever you are. So that's why I really like Ayurveda, because it gives you so much clearer perspective and understanding. If you also learn to like adapt with it and not like become super rigid and nahi bola to yehi karenge, hum nahi khayenge, you know. Just understand why you're doing or why you're not doing certain something. That's so important to be mindful.
Yeah, I think that has been the biggest takeaway from me, for me from this, is that, you know, it's not something that is really, really rigid and refuses to evolve with time. It's just that it has set out some principles and lot of them are quite applicable no matter how situation has changed around us. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of parallels between Ayurveda and the way we lead life, and this has been a really, really enriching discussion, and I can't emphasize enough on the way these things are communicated as well, because more often than not, people try to hoard the information, and that's probably why the tendency to hoard is what prevents some people from addressing the why. So it's like when somebody asks why, perhaps it's with the intention to learn as opposed to, you know, oh, you're wrong or, you know, something of that sort. I think the communication really needs to change as well. And from what you've described and from what I see repeatedly from your workshops, is a very beautiful visual adaptation of how Ayurveda can still be applied and, you know, conveyed in a very relevant form for today's sensibility. So thank you so much for sharing this information.
I'm so glad.
I have really benefited from this discussion today.
Thank you so much, guys, for actually like also having this kind of interest in this subject.
No, so yeah, thank you. Actually, this is really good, and you know, the Ayurvedic diet, like any other diet, you know, it is subjective. You buy into it if you believe it, and then you kind of see the things that are around it, and there is no compulsion or anything around, you know, for that. And that's what people need to take, I guess, is you can choose to see the rationale and question things about it, which is fine. But if you want to look at some things, you may not be able to tie it down to an exact science, because a lot of things are not, there's not very biochemical in their reasoning, but you can see some common traits, and that will help you kind of find more peace with some of the other recommendations that it's making. Like, for example, in my case, I can see I'm hot-headed, and you know, I have a high metabolism, and therefore the choice or the recommendation of avoiding or adding certain food groups is the way it is. I can kind of see that. I can make that journey, I can make that connect, which is why then some of the other things are more easier to grasp. So but I can totally see, you know, how it is subjective, and people may get it, may not get it, but that's okay, which is kind of the fact with any diet that people do, is because it's a way of life. You buy into that way of life, and then there are people who've benefited from it and the people who've not benefited from them. So there's going to be, you know, supporters and naysayers of it either way. And we're not trying to be judges or, you know, of anything here. So it is, but this was a very fun session talking to you, Amrita, because as we're trying to understand your journey and how you got into Ayurvedic food, to kind of schooling us through this on some of these misconceptions that we were having, to kind of helping us through identify what kind of, you know, what kind of doshas we kind of fall into. And I'm sure, you know, as we go through this, listeners would have picked up and have like a basic idea of what dosha they are, and probably they'll go up and read up more about it, or take some quizzes, or even meet you know, a practitioner to get a proper you know, to get a more accurate representation of what dosha or they are, and what kind of things they should do. So I think this was really good, and it's probably going to generate a lot more interest into it, and then people can obviously, you know, contact people who are a lot more experienced in it than Ajit and myself, and which is why we have Amrita. And like Ajit said earlier, you know, her she runs workshops. And then you can also get information on her website, also on her Instagram feed, which is Amrita of Life. So on that note, this is Max Devansi and Ajit from the Nerd Kitchen. We're going to leave you here, but we'll be back pretty soon with more episodes. Please let us know what you think about it. Keep listening. Thank you.